Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Lawrence Gallen of the band Styx. Styx is currently touring North America through 2026, and the band's most recent LP is 2025's Circling From Above. We discuss the continuing appeal of Styx music, as well as some of the ways in which Gowan freed himself behind racks of keyboards in the 1990s. All that and more with Lawrence Gowan on this episode of Into Music, coming up now. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, you know, I was thinking about Styx and, of course, you know, the music's there and everything, but I was really listening to the lyrics recently, and it occurred to me that I think one of the enduring powers is that in the songs, there's this sense of, like, positivity, like the world might be topsy-turvy, but you can make it.
Yeah, I think that's a good observation. There's generally, you know, although they may start off with a difficult subject, let's call it that, it does land the right way. It lands in such a fashion that that you feel like you have the wherewithal to withstand whatever has been brought up. You know, I'm thinking of songs like Blue Collar Man or Come Sail Away or Renegade or Grand Illusion. You know, yeah, I think that's a good observation, Jed. And I think it's also part of the longevity, I think, of the songs is that the human experience is really something that's, we think we're unique to our time on this planet, but we do tend to go through the same challenges that every generation does. We just I guess all that changes really is the technology. And yeah, I think songs that have melodies that stay with people and lyrics that they can see themselves in are the ultimate precursor for longevity, you know, more or less. I mean, there would be exceptions to that, of course, but generally speaking, that seems to be what helps to cross the decades and find new ears.
I think of Grand Illusion, don't be fooled by the radio, TV, magazines. And of course, today it's, you know, don't be fooled by Instagram, TikTok.
That's right. Exactly. That's precisely what I think a song like that is driving at, is that you can be very misled very easily. And, so that's part of what is in my mind when I get a chance to sing that song every night. That's why I relate to it really well, you know. Obviously, it was there long before my time in the band, but it's something that I can... resonates with me, and I, you know, try to deliver it in the most honest way I can.
You know, in your own songwriting, did you find kind of your source material fairly early, the kinds of things that you were going to write about, or did that take work?
Musically, it's far easier to find, you know, music that just, you know, gets you up the spine and gives you the shiver, and you begin to kind of dissect that in a manner where, you know, things begin to, that puzzle falls into place really, you know, in an obvious path. Lyrics, they are more difficult in a way, because, or for me, I'm just gonna speak for myself, they're more difficult because you find that you have to dig to give something that reflects both your own experience and something of a universal enough nature that people can relate to it. You know, I was very, very drawn to, and still am, very drawn to stream of consciousness type lyric writing, where you have to divulge, you know, a meaning that's kind of very you know, unique to yourself. And I still like those songs, but generally speaking, but in a broader sense, I think lyrics that in some ways are plain speak, where people can easily put themselves into the narrative, as I've heard that expression. I think have a little bit a more immediate connection with people. So I would, in myself, I took a lot of digging to find what the subject matter that really made sense to me. And that's still on our most recent album. You know, the lyrics that I contributed to the record are all from a unique point of view, but, you know, trying to convince everyone else in the band, first of all, that this is something worth singing about.
Yeah, yeah. I studied writing in college, and I had this professor who would point at me and goes, "When are you going to find something to say?" You know, he's like, "You've got these experiences. Why don't you dig in and look for that, as opposed to, you know, the kind of superficial stuff?"
Well, this is it. You can easily fall into cliche ridden expressions when you're not doing, as the professor said, you know, finding something to say, something that's unique to yourself that perhaps other human beings could vibe with.
I'm also curious about, I recently saw this performance of you in Montreal in 1990. And
good.
Yeah.
I like that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty intense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, first of all, you must have known early on, like, I got to get out from behind the keyboard. I can't be.
Yeah.
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 So you remedied that pretty quickly, and you established yourself as the, you know, the front man. Was that a lot of work as well, to kind of figure that out?
You know, it's a challenge that piano players generally face if they're hyperactive. Like, you know, Little Richard would be one of the first ones I'd seen. Billy Preston, obviously Elton John, Freddie Mercury. In some way, you know, Keith Emerson, in his own way, even though he was strapped to the keyboards the whole time, especially when it went upside down. You know, I always kind of fought with it, because I am a piano player, and I don't mind being chained to the piano for a long time. But the issue is, in a rock band, if you're the lead singer on any songs, as I am in Styx, you have this tugging at your shirt, so to speak, saying, you know, get out from behind this colossal piece of mechanism, and you know, relate to people, you know, in a more direct way. So yeah, that's, I think what you're probably aiming at is that by 1990, that concert you would have seen from Montreal, that was the first tour where I used the spinning keyboard. And that became the device by which I can quickly plan my escape. Yeah.
Had you seen other people using that, or was that really just kind of like your design? Like,
no, we were doing a video in 1990 for a song called Lost Brotherhood. It's an album that Alex Lifeson from Rush was the guitarist on that album. And he agreed to come and do the video for the title track. It was the second video we made from the record. And when I'd written up the storyboard, and when our director had begun to really piece it together, and it was all working well, I realized that I had the most boring part in this entire video. And so I went to the production department, the lighting people in particular, and said, "Can we come up with something that moves?" And over the course of us gabbing about it, finally we landed on, "How about if it spins?" And one of the fellows there said, "We have enough," like, they had all kinds of extra pieces, etc. "We could concoct something that does that." And then we drew it up, and it was designed and then put together. And I used it in the video, not thinking it was just a video prop just for that song, and was able to kind of move and relate to what all the action that was going on around me. But all the guys in the band, including Alex, kind of, and the crew on the video, said, "Are you going to use that thing live?" And I was like, "No." But then I thought, "Wait a second, this could work." So I took it out on stage, and after the first 5 or 6 shows, I realized that I'm not giving this up.
Wow. Because I've seen people like Derek Sherinian and Jordan Rudess of Dream Theater use that.
Come afterwards.
Yeah. And much more present, let's say, with the audience than being.
Yes, I've actually had one very famous keyboard player actually solicit wanting to get the design to do my revolving keyboard, and I said, "Sure." You know, and I'm getting it all together, kind of, shall I call it. And then when I told Tommy and JY and Chuck, I said, "Yeah, I'm going to send this to, I want to try." And they immediately went, "No, you're not." And I went, "What?" And they went, "No, that's you." You know, and I said, oh, okay. Make your own.
Right. Yeah.
Build your own.
find your own way, kid. That's interesting. And I was thinking about that too. Like, you know, for all the different sounds and everything, just thinking about technology, there would have been a time where you would have just had banks, right?
Yes. I loved that because I loved Tony Banks to begin with, but also, you know, Rick Wakeman was the first one that caught my eye. It was a Time magazine article on Yes, and there was a picture of him with the cape spread out and all the keyboards around the Mellotrons, 2 Mellotrons and 2 Mini Moogs and Hammond B3 and a Steinway 9-foot. And it was just like, oh, that just captured my imagination like Batman, you know what I mean? Batman to a kid. And I thought, wow, this is a whole world, you know? And so, oh no, in my first number of years, the first 5 years anyway, I couldn't get enough. The horseshoe of keyboards around me couldn't be big enough. I loved it. I even expanded upon that back then by putting up a kind of a faux computer-looking thing that flashed lights and everything, much like Star Trek. And that went into the back of the whole rig, so it was monstrous. and it, as intended to be. And I loved that. But when the MIDI, you know, for keyboard players out there know what I'm talking about, revolution kind of happened with keyboards, you began to be able to reduce the number of keyboards you needed on stage. And then once they came out with an 88 key full piano keyboard weighted action, that's when I thought, oh wait, I can put all this other stuff off stage. I can minimalize what I'm using on stage and use my own, throw my body to the wolves more. Yeah.
Well, just 2 kind of final things. We talked earlier about the lyrics and sticks, but I think another thing, of course, is the musicianship. When you hear the way that the instruments interact and everything like that, that's not nothing. So, I mean, the songs are accessible, but there's deep musicianship within it.
Yeah, well, again, that comes from all of us in the band have some measure of progressive rock influence on our playing, even if we've delved into other areas. You know, Tommy Shaw can play great, you know, bluegrass things, et cetera, et cetera, but he can also play any Crosby, Stills, and Nash or more progressive stuff and the stuff he's written, obviously. JY is a very Hendrix influenced player and has utilized that to a great degree. Willie Vankovich, who's now joined us in the last 8 years now, he's such a broad musical knowledge of, there's almost no song you can bring up that he can't just instantly play. And my brother Terry, very much a progressive rock influenced guy by people that I've had a chance to tour with, you know, or record with anyway, like Tony Levin and Chris Squire, etc., Mike Rutherford, sure. And then Todd Zuckerman is just an encyclopedia of musical knowledge, a depth of which I don't think any of us really quite fully approach. You know, he's just got such a depth of tools at his disposal, all based upon a very intellectual way of connecting with music of all types. And Uncertain from Above, you know, our latest record, you can hear all of that. That's all very, very evident. And then on top of that is the singing ability of the band, where we have, you know, the three-part harmonies are now sometimes four-part harmonies and even beyond. So, yeah, there's a lot of musical depth to what we do, but I think the one of the most defining differences, I guess that's what defining is, of the band is that we're all very committed to making the whole thing entertaining. It has to entertain. It has to capture the whimsy, that an audience comes in expecting to, encounter. So that makes it a very unique setup.
Yeah, yeah. What was the thinking of the Beatles anthology when they were in Germany and the club owner was like Max Schau.
Max Schau. I remember reading that as a little kid and realizing, I said this just a couple of weeks ago, but I realized that when I saw them on Ed Sullivan, I'm 7 years old, it wasn't, obviously as a seven-year-old, I didn't have any knowledge of how songs should go together. I couldn't appreciate, you know, All My Lovin' and I Want to Hold Your Hand as being how they musically, you know, worked. What I connected with, I realized now, was how much fun these guys were having and how infectious that was to the audience. That's what it came down to, which meant they're communicating something that's beyond regular, you know, language. And so it becomes a lifelong pursuit to try to divulge or utilize the language of music to communicate with people and make the fun happen. And it can be the darkest, most gloomy song on earth, and it can still make fun happen. It's amazing how that it runs the full gamut of emotions and can still have this incredibly entertaining effect on people and release all kinds of dopamine. Now I'm getting too scientific. It's fun.
Yeah.
F-U-N. P-H-U-N. Fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the audience then becomes part of it as you're projecting, and it's not just like, that's a nice song, but I want popcorn, you know?
Yeah, no, Jeff, that's the middle, the real magic of it is that the energy, whatever you want to call it, the kinetic bonding that happens in the show is cyclical. It goes from the band to the audience, from the audience to the band, from the band to the audience, and it's just this wonderful exchange of energy of some sort that makes a rock show the greatest form of entertainment that I've ever encountered.
Yeah. Well, we talked about the positivity in the lyrics, and I think it's interesting that in 2026, Rush and Triumph are both coming back. And I wondered if there was some sort of conversation among Canadian musicians, like, we have to go down to the States and remind them about civility and kindness.
Oh, that's a fun way of looking at it. You know something? It's really weird you brought that up, Jed. I got a bunch of texts today that last night when Triumph played in Toronto and their screen content, they had me come up on the screen. I got that from about five people so far this morning. And that's because with that band, I go back to the 70s when we were playing clubs at the same time. And Mike Levine actually managed my band for about 3 weeks before he said, now, this Triumph thing is beginning to take off. I'm not going to have time for you guys anymore. And Gil and Mike and Rick obviously were just very simpatico in a lot of ways. That connection of the fact that we're Canadian is definitely runs deep. But Gil, I remember he and I have had several conversations before this tour. He had some trepidation about it that I tried to allay his fears and said people are going to love it. And they are. with Geddy and Alex Lifeson, Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson. I've known those guys or been associated with them since we were managed by the same manager for 14 years of my solo career. So I would see those guys very often and actually get a chance to sometimes hear their records long before they'd come out. You know, I don't know, just kind of, I'm really, really happy for them getting back out and playing again. I couldn't be happier. They're great people as well as musicians. And I guess there's just, wading too deep into the political waters, I was always very proud of the fact that we had the longest undefended border on planet Earth, and that Canada and the U.S., there was a tremendous rapport between the two countries, and there still is. I mean, it doesn't change what the masses of people feel. You know, I'm as pro-American now as I was, but in a different light since the world has shifted. I said I wouldn't wade too deep into this. Let's just say this: music is the balm, BALM, that will fix everything. Okay, it's the balm, man.
You've been listening to a conversation with Lawrence Gowan of Styx. You can learn more about the band Styx at their official website, styxworld.com. You can also find out more about Gowan and his solo career at lawrencegowan.com. Find out more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org and find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time. And as always, we like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torin Anderson.